Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Friday on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. We're at 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. So who is more likely to fill out by hand and mail in their tax return, you or your millennial child? Turns out it's the millennials. They mail in tax returns more than any other age group. We'll talk to some people from Nerd Wallet a little bit later and try to get inside their head and figure out just why that is. You know, Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network, he's one of the companies who institutes this sort of email free day from time to time. And we'll talk to Tom a little bit later about the benefits of that. But we usually start on Fridays with Blue Sky Innovation from the Chicago Tribune. Amina Alahi is in the studio this week for Andrea Haynes. Amina, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm just going to cop to the fact that you came in, and I pronounced your name correctly, and I was so proud of myself, which only figures now we're on the air, I keep screwing it up.
It's okay. It's just more blackmail for me later.
I want to start with the piece that I read about MBAs, because it seems to me, and this is sort of shows my curmudgeon side, but I feel like MBAs were created back when I was an undergrad as a way for schools to make more money. And then they became ubiquitous, right, that you have to have one. Everyone has to have an MBA. So it worked for the schools. Then comes the recession in 2008, the down years later, and all of these companies that were helping to pay for their employees' MBAs started to cut back.
That's right. And MBAs are very expensive to get. I mean, no matter what, it's going to cost a lot. So a lot of times employees rely on their companies to help with some of that tuition. But the trend these days is that companies are less and less able or willing to do that. So schools are trying to get creative with helping the students.
So some statistics from the company that puts out the GMAT exam, they say 68% of companies responding to the survey helped pay for their employees' part-time MBAs in 2011. By 2013, that had dropped to 30%. So the schools, if it is about money, need to find a way to make up this money or make it more attractive to the businesses to cooperate and spend with tuition reimbursement. What are they? Tell me about IIT and what they're doing.
IIT is doing something interesting where they are trying to address specific problems that a company is facing. So say I work for the Tribune and I want to get an MBA. They might help me do a project that would address a problem that the Tribune is facing.
So the idea is if you help pay for your employees' MBA education at our school, we'll address an issue that will help your company.
Exactly.
Is it working?
Well, it's kind of remains to be seen, right? But it's certainly an interesting approach because the big question is whether sending your employees off to get an MBA or helping them pay for it is still going to benefit your business, because that's really what the companies are worried about.
Yeah, you know, Tom Gimbel, I just said earlier from LaSalle Network, is coming in next. I want to ask him about the value of an MBA, because I could be completely wrong about that. The reimbursement programs are done to hold on to talent.
A lot of times, yes. The idea is, you know, we'll send you off to get your MBA, then you come back, you're better qualified than ever, and now you're going to work for us forever. But surely that's changing.
Well, I was going to say, that's another unhappy marriage, right? Because people aren't staying. I would imagine there must be some caveats in there where if I pay for your education, you have to promise to stay here for 5 years or pay back. Or
yeah, I mean, I imagine every company has different stipulations, but that would make sense, right? But now you hear all these statistics about how people, especially millennials, my generation, change jobs so much more frequently than others did in the past. And so it really comes back to that question of the company's return on investment. Are they really going to put tens of thousands of dollars into a person who might turn around and leave?
So IIT will solve your problems if you send them your workers.
Well, they'll try to.
DePaul will actually go to the office for you.
Yeah, I mean, how amazing is that? No commute.
So they're setting up the classrooms in company workspace.
Right. The idea is that they know that a lot of times students need to continue working while they're pursuing this higher degree. So if they put the classroom literally down the hall from the office, it just makes it easier for them to attend. And then it keeps the employees in the office. So I'm sure the companies are happy.
And so that helps lead the companies to pay for some of the reimbursement.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's jump gears then. Do the guys who created Cards from Humanity, do they have MBAs?
Not that I know.
I'm going to bet against it.
Not that I know of.
One of the most, they certainly don't. Although, maybe they could fund ours. I don't know if you have one, but...
I don't. I'll give them a call after this.
One of the most creative, innovative, and successful local companies. Mm-hmm. And they get involved. We mentioned off the air about how they came out with a deck for science. And I think it had benefited scholarships for women in science.
That's right.
Last year. So they're always sort of... they've had great success with their basic game, but then they come up with different notions and gimmicks. And the latest one now is the presidential campaign.
That's right. And this isn't their first sort of foray into politics. But as you mentioned, they do all sorts of different, they call them expansion packs that sort of riff on different themes. And so the one that they released yesterday, actually, there are two. One is Hillary Clinton themed. One is Donald Trump themed. And it's very clever the way that they wrote sort of the promotion for it. They said at the end of the day, we'll see which candidate raises the most money, and regardless, we'll give all the money to Hillary.
So I like that. So it's what, an extra 15 cards or something like that?
Yes, it's 15 cards per pack, and they're $4 per pack, so you're allowed to buy three per household.
And they released it just yesterday?
That's right.
And $93,000 already for...
I just checked before I came down here. The Hillary Clinton pack has now raised more than $141,000, and the Trump pack has now raised more than $132,000.
Wow, so $270,000 in a day.
Not bad.
I said successful, right? Innovative. And they're giving all this money then to committees that will help Hillary Clinton.
Right. So they're giving them to her political action committee. They're giving them to, or they're planning to give the money to groups that oppose Donald Trump. And they're also planning to donate the money to get out the vote campaigns in swing states.
Who do you think's going to win?
I mean, with
wouldn't it be
Cards
more fun
Against Humanity.
Wouldn't it be more fun to play the Trump cards than the Clinton cards?
Well... Oh, you mean who's going to win in the game?
Yeah.
I thought you meant the election.
No, Clinton's going to win that. Yeah. Well, I mean, she's going to win the money.
Well, you know, that's funny because we were saying maybe people are sort of trying to vote for Hillary, but probably the Trump campaign's cards must be hilarious. Yeah,
they've got to
right?
be a lot more fun. Hey, we've got just a little bit left. We've talked before about how Lupe Fiasco is involved in startups in it's Lawndale and Englewood, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got an event coming up this weekend.
That's right. So they are looking. He and an executive from Google are looking for ideas that can generate $100 million. So they're having a pitch competition where a company could win $5,000 to build a prototype of their product. And then after that, they would consider investing further $25,000 to $100,000, but they're really looking for that potential to generate $100 million in revenue.
It's a great program, started in New York City. It expanded here to Chicago this year. And the people who get the money, with the money that they make, right, they have a commitment to reinvest in the particular neighborhood they come from, whether it's Englewood or Lawndale.
Right. They really want to, I mean, one of their stated goals is community and neighborhood development.
You can read a lot more about it at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks very much for coming in, right? That's the wrong website.
That's the wrong website.
Give me the right website. I'm sorry.
It's chicagotribune.com/bluesky.
Amina Alahi, nice to see you again.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is the Tom Gimbel Show on 720 WGN, the Business Lunch, really the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, is in the studio. He comes by most Fridays, and I just can't help but talk about you the whole hour long.
I tell you, you're the best friend I have.
All right, let's go back to the NBA thing,
yep.
Because, you know, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I just have an uninformed opinion, and it seems to me that MBAs have become sort of this automatic thing, and I don't know if they're that valuable in the workplace.
Well, it really depends. First and foremost, people should get an MBA to learn. So if you have an undergraduate degree in history and you want to end up in business and you want to go get an MBA in finance, it's really just augmenting your undergraduate degree. And that's a positive thing, to learn skill sets you don't have.
So it's not about the MBA-ness of it. It's about the subject matter.
Yes, absolutely. And then we got to differentiate. There's Harvard. There's University of Chicago. There's Penn. There's Kellogg. I mean, there's really
sure.
The elite of the elite, which is overkill for certain jobs. Right? I mean, you don't need to pay $150,000.
I guess that's my point, right? That sometimes, you know, we end up feeling like you need to get an MBA when it probably wouldn't make you a better employee.
Yeah, it's also a separator, right? If you put MBA required, then you're ruling out a certain percentage of the population, too. So what companies will do on the flip side is say MBA is mandatory, which means you're eliminating a huge chunk of the workforce.
Okay, so as a guy who looks at talent and recruits talent, that seems to me to be... Maybe a bad way to weed people out.
But you got to find a way to weed people out, okay, right? Because, yeah. I mean, you put an ad, if you're a corporation and you put an ad out for a position and you get 1,000 resumes, how do you sort through right. them, right? So you create some qualifications that allow you to go a certain path and expedite. It's expediting.
Let's talk email because yep. that's what you came in here for. Sure. And I've seen different studies. I talked to a guy a few years ago who did it out in San Francisco where you just shut down the email for a day. Some companies yep. might even do it for a week or a month, which is extreme, but you do it at your company, right?
Yeah, we do it once a quarter, and the goal is to we do it for internal and external. So we want people to have eye contact and talk. There's nothing that irks me more than people sitting 20 feet away from each other having an email
right.
conversation.
Right.
For that matter, having a conversation over the phone irks me when you're 20 feet away. Right. Get up and go talk to the person.
Well, because first of all, the communication is better, right?
For sure.
Much faster. You're saving time, but beside that, you're reading each other's body
language. When I come in studio, it's a different conversation Absolutely. Than when I call in over the phone.
Right. And so there's great value in doing that. How do your workers react to it?
At first, they're a little bit gun-shy. Once they get into it, they're really excited about it. And listen, I'm not naive. People cheat. And with phones, they go to the bathroom and they cheat on their...
People cheat,
right? It's not the Gestapo here. The goal is, if we can get people to realize, the real goal is, if you can get people to realize that if you pick up the phone and call a client or a vendor, you can have a different result faster.
I always feel like every email, and I don't keep it, I'm not as conscious of it as I should be, but every email can and often is read in the worst possible way.
Always. Because people, I think, is human nature is risk averse. We don't like confrontation. We don't want to do this. Email at best use, and it's great, right? We won't want to
Absolutely.
Get rid of it.
Absolutely.
It should be to document what was spoken about.
To back it up.
It should back it up. It shouldn't be the rule of thumb right. to only do that because you lose something.
Something else that happens then is the society of your office, right?
Yes.
People all of a sudden start to learn things about the people they've been sitting next to for 20 years.
Absolutely. And you want to, I believe, that companies should be learning environments. And so people aren't looking over people's shoulders seeing what they're reading, but if you're talking out loud, you hear that. And then yeah. people can learn and grow and steal little tidbits and phrases that you use.
So next time I email you and you don't respond, I should just assume it's one of these email days, right? I don't take it personally.
Please don't.
Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network. How do people find out more information about your company?
You can go to our website, LaSalleNetwork.com, and you can follow me at Twitter, at Tom Gimbel or at LaSalle Network.
Or listen to the next half hour because I'll probably bring you up a few more times. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, millennials, those ages, I think it's like roughly 18 to 34, are now the biggest living generation of Americans. There are more millennials than baby boomers or anyone else, and no one understands them, I don't think. Liz Weston has maybe a view that can help us. She's a columnist, writes for NerdWallet.com, and she joins us now on a phone line. Liz, welcome to the Business Lunch.
It's great to be here.
All right. So do you think you have a handle on millennials? Do you understand them?
Well, I work with a lot of them. Yeah. I mean, NerdWallet is filled with really bright, competent, interesting millennials. So I think I have a more positive view than a lot of people who haven't worked directly with them. But they do have some interesting fears, which we kind of dug into in one of our surveys.
Yeah, it is a quirky thing. So you looked at it when it comes to their relationship with filing their taxes, right?
Right, and they have a lot of fears. They have more fears than other generations, which kind of makes sense because, you know, they're relatively new to taxes. They haven't had a lot of experience with it. But what really struck me was that a lot of them are filing paper returns. You just don't expect that with the millennial generation. You think everything's going to be on the phone.
That's a shocking thing to me. So 17% of millennials fill out and mail in their returns, and the typical, if you're 35 or older, is 8%. So you're twice as likely, if you're a millennial, to mail in your taxes. Can you explain that?
Well, we can only guess, but one of the things I think is going on is that millennials obviously are going to be filing simpler returns
okay,
for the most part.
Right.
So they get to file the 1040 EZ, you know, which you can fill out by hand and just ship in. So that might be part of it. And again, the unfamiliarity with taxes, they may still have a little bit more comfort zone with paper when they don't know what they're doing or their first time doing it. And what millennials don't realize is that a lot of the fears they have about the IRS coming in and upending their life, you know, are misplaced. For one thing, the IRS's budget has been cut so severely that that's unlikely. But also, you know, they're W-2 earners, typically. They're not people who can hide a lot of income, so they're not going to be targets for audits.
Well, you know, it's a good point, because I'm the owner of a couple millennials, 18 and 20, and I still do their taxes, you know, because they're very simple, and so that would skew a little bit of it. It'd make it easier for them just to fill out a piece of paper or not be as involved. But they're also much less likely than average to hire a professional to do their taxes. Does that, again, go back to the fact that it's just simpler?
I think it's simpler. Also, you know, they don't have a lot of extra money. That's part of it. And they're turning to family and friends a lot, like your kids do with you. They have you do their taxes, which I'm sure you do an excellent job with it. But in general, friends and family are not the best resources for taxes. It's a complicated area. It's changing all the time. So I think as their taxes get more complicated, they probably will be reaching out and hiring more pros.
Can I tell you that twice in the last 3 years for my daughter, I've had to refile her taxes? Because I've messed it up.
What happened?
I think last year there was a W-2 that came in later than I didn't know was coming in, and she hadn't given me the heads up, so had to file an amended return. So I guess she would be likely to be, I guess it's a good idea that she's a little wary of people filing taxes for her.
Yeah, I mean, it's those kind of things are the things that happen. Also, since they're changing from job to job, there can be sort of, you know, those kind of mix-ups and lapses. But it really does help to have, especially as you get older, somebody that you can ask questions of. And I used to do my own taxes. In fact, I do them 8 or 9 times a year for my husband and I, just to test out the various tax software. I would still take it to a tax pro, and she would find things I'd missed. She'd find mistakes that I'd made. She'd found deductions I'd forgotten about. So it really can pay to have somebody professional look over your return before you send it in.
Liz, that sounds like one of Dante's rings of hell. You do your own taxes 6 to 8 times a year, and it still doesn't count?
I hope it's gaining me some point somewhere. But, yeah, I wouldn't do it anymore. That's just too much work.
Really? Okay. I do my own taxes, and they're fairly complicated. I do them every year with TurboTax or some other comparable software. You think I might be making a mistake?
I don't know. I mean, my husband and I both had separate businesses in addition to W-2 income. You know, we had some investment accounts. We had some other things where I just wanted to ask some questions. I had rental property for a while. That made things more complicated. I think if you're just dealing with W-2 income and, you know, pretty straightforward deductions, the tax software is great. I mean, TurboTax is a wonderful program. I just think as things get a little more complicated and as your life changes, it can be nice to have someone to ask these questions of.
Well, it's nice to take a little bit of the responsibility off you, off yourself, I guess, and to deal with a professional in that way, just to get, I guess, for your own mental health in many ways.
Yeah, I think delegating is really important. There's certain things that we do well. We should be concentrating on that. And for me, keeping track with tax law, which is changing all the time, and trying to, you know, parse through all the gray areas, not something I wanted to spend my time doing. I really am glad to have. I have a CPA now, but I used to have an enrolled agent, which is, you know, a former IRS agent, a little bit less expensive than CPAs. They're terrific as well.
All right, so maybe that speaks to the next statistic I want to go over, and that's confidence in the refund. 20% of millennials, 19%, say they're not confident that they got the maximum refund possible. That's of millennial men. When you compare that to men over 45 years old, it's 5%. So almost 4 times more likely to think you didn't get your full refund if you're a millennial. That doesn't jibe with what we said earlier, that the simpler taxes would lead to people filing by paper. Explain that number for me.
Yeah, I think, again, that's just an issue of unfamiliarity with taxes. If you don't understand how they work in general, you're going to feel like I must have missed something. And it can help just to use software instead of doing it by hand. You know, using the software, you're going through that interview process, it's harder to miss things. It doesn't mean that you won't, but it's harder to miss something. So I think if people are using software, if they're getting some kind of input, you know, if they're not using professional, at least if they're using that, I think they'll have a bigger comfort zone. I think it's when you're filling it out by hand that you're going to have that question mark in your head. Did I get everything right? One common thing that comes up all the time is people see that head of household thing.
Right.
And think, well, I'm living on my own. I must be the head of my household. That's not how it works. So that's the way that, you know, people might get too much of a refund because they've claimed a status for themselves that they don't deserve.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are the, like the little complications that can make people uncertain about, you know, did I do the right thing? Am I getting the maximum back?
I think I'm one of that 5%. I never feel like I get the maximum back. I always feel like someone else is finding something that I didn't know about.
It's possible. Well, that's true. And then there also is kind of a holdover for us because we remember the big bad IRS from the 80s where, you know, people were having these, the IRS agents would come to their house and tear their life apart, you know, these random audits that went on forever. That doesn't happen anymore. But I think it scarred us so completely that sometimes you'll look at a deduction and go, you know what? That's not worth it. I'm not going to take that thing.
Well, I don't want to risk it. And I think there are others who take those risks and probably get bigger returns. I'm a coward, I guess, Liz. That's what it took your interview to come out.
Well, maybe you're just more ethical. Why don't you put it that way?
I'm a little more cautious, probably too cautious for my own good. But, you know, you bring up the fact that you go to someone, and that's probably a good idea. The piece in NerdWallet that we're talking about, nerdwallet.com, also points out that if you hairstylists have to go through a more rigorous sort of, not training, but certification process than do tax preparers. So you need to be pretty careful when you're picking someone to do the taxes for you.
Yeah, I would say just because a person's willing to do it does not mean that they're confident to do it. I think the minimum I'd want to see is somebody who's an enrolled agent. And then if you have a complicated return at all, if you have a business, if you have a lot of investments, then maybe upgrading to a CPA is the way to go.
And it's not a big deal if you want to someone to show you their papers to ask them, right? Because if they're in the business, they should be prepared to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they should be registered with the IRS now. But the idea that they, you know, there's no sort of standard for what they need to know is a little bit scary.
If people are more likely to save their returns or the refunds, I should say, or to spend them lavishly on themselves.
Well, everybody says they're going to save it or pay down debt. That's the intention. And when you look later, actually a lot of people do exactly that. They boost their savings or they pay down their debt. So that's good. I think it's a little harder, though, once the money's in your hot little hands to do the right thing with it. So that's why, you know, you hear personal finance types always talk about adjust your withholding, adjust your withholding. It's better to get the money in every paycheck than at the end. But that's, you know, people really love their refunds. They love that infusion of cash. Try to save half of it. Try to put half of it toward a good cause, paying down credit card debt, sticking it in a retirement account, whatever. You know, try to do at least that.
Liz Weston is a columnist for NerdWallet.com. Liz, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate it today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me, Steve.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Orion talked about the butcher and grilling and food yield, so let's keep that theme going. Samantha Baumkamp is in the studio. She writes for the business section of the Chicago Tribune and wrote recently about food trucks. Samantha, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
I almost called you Sam. Do you go by Sam?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
So that's okay.
So what's your favorite food truck?
Oh, I love the Donner Men, and there's a dumpling truck that now, of course, I'm forgetting the name, but fabulous around UFC.
Yeah, it's, you know,
really good.
Puts you on the spot a little there. I wonder if we remember the names of the trucks, or I could not name a food truck for you. I just know I love that big cheese truck.
Oh yes.
And there's an empanada truck that's up in Highwood once in a while that I love. Okay, so here's the deal: they're businesses. Right, so you've got to get insurance for your business, but their business is in a car, so you've got to get some sort of, I would imagine, enhanced automotive insurance, too. That's a new market, right? And farmers are stepping into it.
Right. It's kind of surprising to me that, you know, you think of, especially living in a city like Chicago, you think food trucks have been around for years, and the insurers are just getting around to packaging policies in such a way that makes it desirable for food truck owners. But basically what Farmers is doing is starting on September 1st, they're packaging a traditional restaurant policy and then also the commercial auto. So everything included in that, like commercial truck and the covering the equipment and liability and even workers' compensation, all rolled up into one. So it makes it really easier for food truck owners.
Right. So I would imagine it's much more convenient for the food truck owners. Do they think it's going to save them money?
Right. I couldn't get a very clear answer on that.
Go figure.
Right. what they told me is that, you know, the policies range widely for everyone. You know, it depends. Like Carnival, for instance, just, you know, a famous restaurant just opened, just started a food truck or is starting one up now. So it would be different versus to have a food truck standalone versus a restaurant and a food truck, and all the kind of situations are different.
So I know Chicago was sort of reluctant for a while, but city government anyway, the citizens not at all. They embrace food trucks. What are the requirements for insurance and things like that when it comes to Chicago?
The city of Chicago requires a hefty liability, a coverage of up to a bottom line $350,000. So that alone can cost these guys a pretty penny.
Right. So Farmers Insurance coming out with a policy next month in Illinois. They've already done it in Utah,
New Mexico, and a couple other states, and they expect it to roll out in about half the country by the end of the year.
So here's the thing. It's attractive to the food trucks. What's in it for farmers? Because it doesn't seem like it would be a huge market for them to tap.
Right. But if I'm a food truck owner and I have to
make a choice,
call a bunch of different insurers for all the different kinds of insurance that I require in the city that I live in requires, it makes them a one-stop shop, and that alone makes them very attractive.
Samantha Bomcap writes it for the business section at ChicagoTribune.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.